Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Greetings, Podcastverse. Okay, quick business up top. The next Nerdist podcast live in Los Angeles at Largo will be July 28th. And our special guest is Fred freaking Willard. Fred Willard. Fernwood Tonight. Fred Willard. Best in Show. Fred Willard. He's amazing. And we will own him temporarily, so you can rent time with him if you come to the show. There's also going to be special guests on that show. I haven't confirmed them yet, but as soon as I do, I will pass on that information to you. You can purchase tickets at Nerdist.com, so please go do that. All right, this episode... this is embarrassing. I should have posted this back in April when we recorded it, but for whatever reason I didn't. I don't have an excuse. It's a great episode, and the guest is one of my favorite comedians, Mr. Bill Burr. He is definitely one of the best comedians working today. There's no question. If you ever get a chance to see him and you don't, then you hate laughing and comedy. Because he is truly phenomenal. He also has a fantastic podcast called the Monday Morning Podcast, and you should download that as well. But before you do that, please listen to and enjoy episode number 24 of the Nerdist Podcast with Bill Burr. You're nice.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
How's that? Am I decent?
Very good. Uh-huh. Your mic is hot.
My mic is hot.
We're here at Bill Burr's place. There seemed to be some kind of sports on in the background. Bill, I'm not sure. I see a guy with a towel around his neck, and he's sweaty, and there's some ice. Would that be...
That's hockey.
Water polo, hockey.
Hockey. Are we doing this now? Are we going?
We're live, man.
We stumble into every podcast.
Oh, you just go in. All right.
We don't. There's no official.
Yeah, we trip through the door.
I'm here.
I thought you were doing the most amazing mic check ever. I was like, this guy, he rehearses during mic check.
I feel like our podcasts are an hour-long mic check. And then right when we get to the end, we're like, all right, now let's do this. But then we've already used up our time.
Yeah.
So.
I'm a huge hockey fan. I have the center ice package and... that's what I do. I sit here and I watch all the games like I'm scouting the league or some shit.
Every one of my friends when I was younger all played... when I was in college, all my friends played hockey. Uh-huh. And my buddy, this kid named Will Wheaton, who is, you know, as a geek, he was a goalie for a while until someone hit a puck at his face, and which you do.
Sure.
And the puck split his face mask and just went through and like split his head wide open.
Wow. And, where did he get that face mask at? Did he just grab the I'm going to go as Jason on Halloween?
I think it said
Wait, more importantly, who the kid that hit that puck, who's he playing for now?
I don't know. All I know is that the mask said Hecho in Mexico underneath. So I don't know if it's
it was like
I guess
Al
Mexican
McGinnis's
ice mask.
Son. Huh? Anybody? All right.
Al McGinnis, that sounds like a sporty thing.
Yeah.
I know.
Well,
Alec Guinness.
I actually didn't play hockey when I was I grew up outside of Boston, and it was one of those deals where you had to grow up in a hockey family where it was like your parents were willing to take you to like to the rink at like 5:30 in the morning, and my parents were more traditional, like baseball. They were just baseball. So and then not only that, it cost I think like $9,000 a kid to play.
Hockey is ridiculously expensive.
Well, not only that, but it's like hockey players' trunks, all those kids just they smelled like someone took a shit on death and ate it and threw it back up. Like it was the worst because you can't. It's hard to wash that stuff.
That's the funniest thing about hockey is all they talk about is the goons and the thuggery and how it's barbaric and it's really an elitist sport.
It really is.
Yeah, it's like you guys can't even afford to play it.
Well, yeah, you have to.
That's why they play field hockey.
You have to be a graceful brute, which is a very interesting dichotomy.
And afford skates. You have to be able to afford skates.
Yeah, you have to learn how to walk and run all over again and fight.
Yep.
I mean, the live hockey games I've been to, the couple, I thought they were fascinating. I like to observe.
You know what? That really sounds like you're not coming back. Well, how'd you enjoy your first hockey game? That was fascinating.
It was very interesting.
Live hockey is the best sport to watch. I think it's the best sport to go to. I enjoy live hockey the most.
Really? Basketball?
Yeah.
And wouldn't you agree you have to learn how to watch it on TV? Like the thing about when you watch it on TV, the line change is happening. Like my place somewhere over near my walk-in closet is where they're actually skating off. But if you never watch, you're like, why did they all go up and just quit? Why did they stop? Like people don't understand how tired you get. Like the average shift is, I think it's only like a minute and 90 seconds long or something like that. And they're absolutely exhausted. And so
yeah, try propelling yourself across the ice with like 40 pounds of clothing. And they're big guys, and so their bodies have to work harder anyway.
It's such a weird sport, because it's like, oh, this thing, let's do this fun activity, but let's make it harder on ice.
Yeah. It reminds me of the tale of Harrison Bergeron.
I think he just recreated the conversation, how they came up.
Yeah.
What do you want to do today? Hey, guys, let's do this fun activity, but let's make it harder.
We have all this ice. We should be doing something with it.
We're so good at this. Let's not
And then someone's older brother was like, fuck you, nerds. And then that's where the fighting came in, because he would just go around and pound them.
But why rip off their shirt? Oh, why is that like a thing?
You pull it over their head.
Pull it over their head so they can't see. So you can.
Oh, that's dirty pool.
It is dirty pool.
Yeah.
Well, they don't necessarily really do that anymore. Like, there's a lot more gentlemanly. Like,
are they still allowing brass knuckles in hockey, or was that the old days?
No, that slap shot and the combination of that movie and the 70s.
So the Hanson brothers are not playing anymore.
Yeah, no, but you know what the thing is they got whenever there's an incident in hockey, like something bad happens, these people come out of the woodwork and they start describing hockey like it's 1975. And I sit at home laughing, going, I wish it was half as barbaric. Like this, like it used to be like there'd be a fight a period, it seemed, or at least a couple fights a game. Now I watch the Bruins games and, you know, they go like three games without a fight. There'll be, you know, a couple little pushing and shovings. But
well, they get fined probably more now than they did before, right?
They did all of this stuff to the sport to appease these people who criticized it, so then that those same people could continue to not watch hockey. they used to be the benches were across from each other, so the teams would could look at each other. So after a shift, if you hated a guy, you'd sit there eyeballing each other, and there was a lot of times they'd come out and just fight center ice. They made them next to each other so they can't look at each other. There's no third man in anymore. You could you could do third man in, which is basically if the two of us were fighting. You know,
I'm going in.
Yeah, you could just be, oh, wow, my guy's losing. And then you could just come over and smash me.
Well, that's when
face.
I stopped watching, was after the old thing. I don't know what I'm talking about.
You know what I love is you guys told me in the beginning that you're not sports fans, yet you just went with it.
Well, I'll tell you
and
something.
And you picked one of the most obscure.
I find the concept of it interesting.
Oh, it's fascinating. It really is fascinating. You got to rub your chin.
My dad was a professional bowler, so I grew up on the Pro Bowlers Tour. So I know about I know about that. But
he knows about fake sports. Ice.
I would love to see. Hey, wait a minute. Why the fuck would you? That's my dad's. I'd love to see. I say fucking drop a polar bear on the ice. You know, I'd make it challenging. Have to skate around a large.
So try to make it kind of like
largest
a land
predators.
Gladiator thing.
Yes,
where
yes, yes.
Fucking not polar bear
takes a swipe.
Are you listening, Gary Bettman?
I don't know who that is, but he's probably not.
I actually have a good bowling story, a funny bowling story.
By the way, before you start that, I should tell people we're sitting here with Bill Burr. We're 6 minutes and 54 seconds
in
and I haven't...
In case you didn't read the description on iTunes.
There was somehow to navigate through your computer without looking.
Matt, I keep telling you, iTunes doesn't come in Braille. We might have some visually impaired people who are watching. They don't know who we're talking to, so I'm telling them that it's Bill Burr. Bill, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Turn on voiceover.
Please go on with your bowling story.
All right, so I I hooked up this girl and I'm you know, trying to go on a date with her or whatever. Let's get a drink. Let's go to a movie or something like that. And she goes, you don't like bowling? And she was so hot. I was like, yeah, I love bowling. And she looked unbelievably gorgeous when I saw her. And she showed up on the date. She wasn't wearing any makeup. And just the way she was dressed, and I could tell I wasn't getting any. And I was so fucking mad. I never tried so hard at bowling in my life. You know, like if you think you're getting laid, you're like, you know, you'd back off or something. I didn't. I fucking destroyed her. I won by like 50 pins. And she was doing that female stuff, like just the body language and shit, where I know she was just like, God, you're not going to let me win it. Ease up. Dude, it was the best game I ever had. I had four strikes. Four fucking strikes, and I was bowling a straight ball. And this is the thing, too. I'm right-handed. They were hitting on the left side of the front pin, and they were somehow knocking down. I was like, I was willing it to happen.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So then after that, did you conquer her into submission, or was she like, well, I've never...
No, I felt it was going that route, and the fact that she didn't have the decency to dress... Like, she even gave a fuck, and I was paying for this. I didn't care at that point. I was like, fine, I'll go home and rub one out. I don't give a shit. And right. I just plowed ahead.
By rubbing one out, you mean...
Yeah, jerking off.
Yes.
Yeah.
And by jerking off, you mean...
Sex by myself.
Sex by myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Table for one, please.
Yeah, but it's like when you know you're going to get fired, so you quit. Or so it was
and then you jerk off
lines.
Outside the boss's office.
Yeah. So I was beating her to the when you know I was almost doing like, well, fine, I don't want to hook up with you either. It was very childish.
You know what?
Dude,
I
watch
you
anyway.
I love
check this out.
I love that philosophy. I think if more people adopted the philosophy of, well, fuck it, I'll just go home and rub one out. I feel like we would be a lot healthier as a society because then we wouldn't get so caught up in all that. You could have easily gotten caught up.
You could have gotten caught up in that.
No, well, believe me, it took like 50 times of that happening before I finally smartened up, and I was just like, "Oh, okay, I see what this is."
So you just whipped it out in the car. That's what you mean, you smartened up.
No, I went home. Wasn't there a story about that? Somebody accused somebody of doing that, and the guy's like, "No, I was like scratching the inside of my leg." This guy was driving down the street and said this other guy was jerking off, and he called the cops. So then the guy said, "I'm going." No, I wasn't. And the guy was like,
"Case
dismissed. Yeah, you were."
I got pulled over right after the cell phone law started in California. I got pulled over. I had a ear infection. I was kind of like lightly trying to scratch my ear and appease the itch without like making it too painful. And I got pulled over when I was driving just because the cop thought I had like the phone up to
Did
my
you show
ear. He's like, you were on your phone. I was like, no, I wasn't. And then I had to show him that my antibiotics. And
show him your pussy ear infection.
My pussy bleeding ear.
Why can't you just be like, no, I wasn't. It's your word against mine. I mean...
I have a very big fear of cops. I hate cops so much.
You don't hate them.
Do you guys know that comedian?
What about a Samoan cop? What would that do to you?
That would just be growing up.
All right.
I remember like, there was times where I got pulled over. It's like, you freaking howly kids. You know, like that. Like I would just get pulled over for being white.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, white man. White people have it tough, you guys. It's like we're constantly being...
harassed.
Yeah, we're being profiled racially, terrible. And it's really tough.
I remember one time this kid was trying to tell me, like, he's like, you don't know what it's like growing up Mexican in California. I was like, I bet it sounds a lot better than growing up white in Hawaii, which is what it was in my life. Yeah.
Flippity flop.
I was surprised I thought of it that quick, too, at the
time. Did he understand what you were talking about?
No, he had no idea.
Oh, okay.
So it takes a lot for someone to realize I'm from Hawaii and accept that.
What do you mean? It's a vacation spot.
Exactly. Sounds great.
Yeah, how did you end up there? Military brat?
No, that's what everyone assumes. Thanks for throwing brat in there.
Sorry, I meant to say military.
Okay, did one of your ancestors conquer that place and enslave the local Hawaiians?
No, my ancestors on my dad's side of the family came over. They were one of the first immigrants to come and work on the sugar cane plantations in the late 1700s.
Wow.
Yeah.
You come from the bottom of the barrel of white people, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Azorean Portuguese people.
Take that, Mexicans. I think that's what we just got from a long line of indentured servants.
Alfreds, all of us.
Now listen, you pointed out that Matt Myra sitting right here was wearing a NASA shirt when we came in.
Yes, I am.
This sort of loops back to the fact that I first met you when my buddy Mike Furman and I opened for you at the Houston Improv like 4 years ago.
Oh, that's right.
And we went to the Johnson Space Center.
Oh, that's a good one.
I didn't think it was a good one because the inside of it, it felt like it was just for kids. So there was all these things to, I mean, like you, I saw the inside of a shuttle and yeah, great, but we were so kind of.
They have one of the Apollo capsules there. I think 14 is there.
Well, we didn't. We also didn't take the tour of the grounds. But there was so much like jungle gym to it that we literally put on the little audio tour. And you know, you punch up on the audio tour numbers, and it'll tell you about whatever you're standing in front of. We would just walk up in front of trash cans and hit like 14, and it would be like, "This is the module where the astronauts showered every day in space." We just literally were standing in front of trash cans and vending machines, trying to make it fun.
Space showers are impossible. It's gravity. Just don't worry about it.
I am worried about
it's
it.
About those sports, all right,
well, I guess I won't go to that. I was thought you were going to be able to like, crawl into one of the. The space capsules there, whatever you call them, the things at the top of the rocket, a couple of janitors.
I think they're called flippity-doos, right? Is that true? Flippity-doos?
Yeah. You know, Houston was originally, they were going to put it in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Kennedy was going to have everything there. And then when Kennedy died, Johnson was like, we're moving it.
Wait, Kennedy died?
Come on.
Do you break this out on like first dates?
Third dates. <You're> sort of
like, third dates.
Third.
Because by the third date.
They're in anyway. I've already.
She's just started loosening the restraints. Yeah. And
I feel on dates, though, you kind of got to let it loose early
you gotta,
on.
Yeah,
you know, if there's any hope.
I'll show up in my NASA t-shirt.
Yeah.
Will you show up in a like an astronaut suit, in a flight suit?
If they made them big enough, I would.
Do they do that to discourage large astronauts?
I was when I was a kid, I was always like, I'll never get to go to space camp because I'm so fat.
Jesus Christ.
That's what I always used to think. I also wanted to go on Double Dare really bad, but I thought I would get stuck in one of the obstacle courses.
Jesus Christ.
You can read about it. You can read about it in Matt Myra's new autobiography, Too Fat for Double Dare.
Super sloppy Double Dare, though. You can squeeze through with all that shit all over.
So what did you
do? I get stuck in the sandwich.
Did you
What,
start played? Working out, or you just said, fuck it, I'm going
no, I
hell
played,
bent
yeah,
for
I
ring
played,
dings?
I played baseball and football. Like, I don't know. I've always been...
How old were you when your astronaut dream died? That's really sad. Let's explore this pain.
12, maybe? I 12. Was like,
Can I pitch something? Can
yeah,
I pitch something
ahead.
For the next generation? Fatstronauts.
Fatstronauts!
Can we pitch Fatstronauts?
I think we should.
I'm into it.
Just like... You know, like recliners in space. And
I also wanted to go on Guts, but I thought I'd never make it up the aggro crag without dying.
I don't know what any of those words were.
That's another game show for kids on Nickelodeon.
Did you grow up in Scotland? Because that sounded... So yeah, I heard the word crag.
And aggro.
I just did a gig over there.
You went to Scotland?
Yeah.
Did you go to Edinburgh?
Then I did Dublin, then I went over to Glasgow.
You went to Glasgow?
Yeah.
That's like thug capital of...
That's what they said. I found them, you know, I didn't find them to be crazy at the... Thought they were rather polite.
My feeling, though, is that, and I've talked about doing comedy in England before. I did it once, and the crowd was very aggressive. Did you find your crowds were aggressive in London?
I found in London that they were one of those crowds where, first of all, London, I guess, they take everything as a rhetorical question.
And they answer you back.
When I was asking them if they had squirrels over there, I was legitimately asking because I hadn't seen one. And then I found out later that they had red squirrels over there. And then some asshole brings over the gray ones from the States, you know, trying to get pussy, right? Look what I got. Something new. I've been somewhere. And then I guess they were beating the shit out of the red ones. So then they had to protect the red ones. And so, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Squirrels are a great way to get pussy.
I remember a British
all the
family.
All the pussies.
Really...
Do you want to go out and get some pussies, Jonah?
I want to get all the pussies. Tonight,
every
guys.
Pussies.
We got to go out to those clubs and get all the pussies.
We have to get so much pussies. I've been to the Edinburgh Festival. There was almost a language barrier because the accent was so thick that I couldn't understand.
But they can
like
understand
half
the comics. The way you speak, they would be able to understand it because they watch the news and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like those guys speak, what is that, career speech is what they call it. You sound like you're from nowhere. I'm not saying you sound that way, but you're close enough. Like when I listen to you, I don't know where you're from.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was born in Kentucky and raised in Tennessee.
Jesus, really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't want to hear I was hyping my Kentucky gigs.
No.
On my podcast. I was in a bad mood.
Listen up, assholes.
No, I was like, I know I'm not going to be standing there in overalls with wheat hanging out.
I put my flyers inside vaginas so people's families would come out because that's the only way they're going to see anything.
Yeah, that's
Tell me about,
shit.
I want to hear about comedy in Glasgow because I feel terrified to go perform over in Great Britain anymore.
Nah, you shouldn't be.
Really?
Yeah.
It's all right?
Well, what's the worst they're going to do?
No, not...
Yeah, that's what you always got to think.
Murder,
they're going to yell something
murder.
At you, and they're always going to be wearing something stupid, or they're going to, like, They're going to have a big head. They're going to have something that you can go off
particularly
on.
In Great Britain.
Yeah, and it's
they're
just
going to have
like,
fucking drive-in movie foreheads.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I got mine from. But it's like, I'm not saying like specifically like London. I'm just saying that any crowd that that messes with you is there's going to be something that you can say back to them. And generally speaking, the whole crowd is on your side.
Right.
Unless you do like the Apollo or something like that, where it's actually, that's part of the experience where, you know, if you go there to see,
Did you ever do the Apollo?
Yeah.
Oh my God. What was it like?
I survived it. That's the only way to describe it. I didn't get booed. I did well.
Yeah. Which is like killing for a white dude.
Well, first of all, there's white guys who've absolutely destroyed on it. But I went out and I went out there thinking, don't get booed, don't get booed, don't get booed. Now you're not going to be performing your best, thinking that type of stuff, you know. And a couple people before me had gotten booed, and it was one of those things where I was standing on the side of the stage going, why? I really didn't need to do this as far as my white guy journey. to trying to get a half hour on Comedy Central, but it was just something I wanted to do as a comedian, just because it scared the hell out of me, and I that's the one thing I hate the most, being on stage. I hate being scared, because then you're on your heels, then you're not being yourself, and then you hate yourself going home, and it's like, wait, I do this to fill me up, you know, like this is what makes my day worth it, and if I go on stage and I'm sitting there like, hey guys, how are you, you know. And just, it's the worst feeling ever. So I just was like, all right, I'm just going to drive right into the storm here. And, you know, and believe me, I got humiliated a lot. But it definitely made situations like going to London, Dublin, and Scotland. And even though people were going like, oh, man, you know. I mean, all I knew about Scotland was Braveheart and Train Spotting.
Mm-hmm. So that's all you need.
Yeah. So that's all I was picturing, was some drunk guy throwing a bottle and it lands on some woman's head and everybody laughs and continues on.
Scrooge McDuck also.
Well, don't forget about, Scotland. The thing I learned about Train Spotting is that babies crawl on ceilings.
Oh, yeah.
Scottish toddlers.
Only when the drugs are really good,
though. Yeah. They like to die and crawl on ceilings. Yeah. I'm fascinated that you did the Apollo, and I love the idea of... What's interesting is, like, the longer... I've been doing comedy professionally now since 99, right. And I'm kind of getting to that point where... And maybe you know what I'm talking about. I'm sure you do. You've been doing it longer. How long have you been doing it?
18
years. You can have what people will perceive as a good show, and you can still feel really awful about it if you feel like you got scared, or you feel like you didn't kind of pull out of yourself whatever you wanted to pull out. But then you can also have shows where the crowd isn't into you, but if you feel like, well, I did everything I would want to do, you can still feel okay about it.
Yeah, if it's a bad setup, or if they're morons, which very rarely will I just say the entire crowd is morons, but there's certain times, like, I used to do, like, all kinds of different rooms. And I found in some of those what they call uptown rooms, when it'd be an all-black crowd, sometimes if you just got a really, like, specific demographic, it was almost like going up in front of a bunch of rednecks. It was the reverse of it. Like the really, really redneck crowd wants to hear you talk about, you know, having a fucking, you know, a car and a bathtub on your front lawn, and if you're not talking about that, they don't want it. Then they don't give a shit. They don't want to hear. And I found in some of those rooms that you would go in, that if you were like, as a white guy, the point of view, you could be the white guy trying to act black, or you could be the white guy talking about how scared you were being up there. Mm-hmm. But if you actually went up there and tried to do bits. And like we're going, like talking about whoever was president at the time, you were just instantly considered corny, and everyone would, you know, either not paying attention all the way to throw shit at you, depending on how bad it was.
Those blackneck rooms are rough. Can we call them blacknecks?
I don't know what you call.
I think it would be the equivalent.
Well,
you said, but
you should be able to, because there's nothing malicious in what you're saying. Rednecks should be.
I shit on rednecks constantly, and I feel bad for doing that, because I mean, they were people that I grew up with. You know, my dad owns a bowling center in Memphis, Tennessee.
So then don't you have the right to do it?
I feel like
and I can say it, people, because I was a redneck.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I do. But where did you grow up?
I grew up outside of Boston, the suburbs. And I always make sure that I say the suburbs. Have you found, since Good Will Hunting came out, everybody's like, South Boston?
Yes.
Were you a genius with a mop? No, I wasn't.
Wait, that's the name of your new book, Genius with a Mop.
Yeah, what? And Fat Astronaut.
Fat Astronaut.
Fat Astronaut.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think your book was called Too Fat for Double Dare. I think that's what it was called.
Adult Swim, dude. Fat Astronaut.
Let's do it. All right.
I said lunch,
people would
not
root
lunch.
For you.
that was from Far Out Space Nuts.
Far Out Space Nuts. I remember that. Far Bob Space Denver's. Nuts.
Yep, and Chuck McCann. Yep.
It's an astronaut's favorite meal of the day, lunch.
It sure is, for some reason that I don't know. Are you on the road a lot now?
I'm on the road in a good way. Like every other week, I'm on the road, and that's great because I still love it, and I still love performing live and that type of stuff. You know, I moved out here to LA to try to do like movies and that type of stuff, just to figure out what the hell the next step was. But this is how the road works for me. If I have a week off in between each gig, I'm excited to go to the next one. But if I start doing back to back weeks, I want to kill myself. And I wonder why I didn't just open a hardware store. There's really no happy medium. Like, I actually flying back, for you listeners who never flown LA, it's like 17 hours or something once you go through all customs and that shit. So I actually took 2 weeks off in between. I have a ridiculously awesome life where I don't have a boss and I can do whatever the fuck I want. I play drums and guitar.
Well, but you also
living the life. You're living the life, people.
You seem pretty grounded, though. Like, you don't seem like there's a few fuck up comics in our business. It's nice to meet someone that doesn't feel like I got to be a tortured asshole and a dick to everyone. Like,
well, you know, also you're judging me on like 20 minutes of your podcast. If you talk to my girlfriend in the other room, she'd be like, you know, she'd probably tell you some other things.
Listen, any relationship, when you open up the curtain and look what's back there, you're going to see sides of people you don't like. But when Fermin and I opened for you, it was awesome.
You know what I realized though, that really made me like it was a nice bucket of cold water to the faces. I remember one night I was sitting here and I was watching them. They were selling these tapes of the Oscars, like classic Oscars, which was hilarious to me.
Remember when the nude man ran behind David Niven?
Yeah, it was all that stuff. Yeah. All that stuff. Like the 1991 Oscars. And they showed one from
Life is Beautiful.
Yeah,
walked on the seats, that crazy Heidi.
Yeah, and it was like one of those deals where they showed one from only 12 years ago, and the amount of presenters that I was looking at, like, who is that guy? Or, oh my God, what happened to her? And it's like, these people were presenters on the biggest night in entertainment, and 12 years later, it's like, I remembered who they were because I actually watched them, but somebody who's like 20 years younger than me was probably like, you know, 5 or 7 years, they have no idea who they are. I saw Candace Bergen was the one that I saw from Murphy Brown. She was huge.
Yep.
Yeah,
she was huge, and she was a presenter, and now... You know, I'm not shitting on her or anything, but it's just like, so there's no, like, if you sit there and like, you're already going to end up on the scrap heap at some point. This business is going to be done with you, whether you like it or not. So the more you're a decent guy and not an asshole, the longer you can sustain it.
But a lot of people forget that. And the other great thing about comedy is I feel like, I mean, maybe I just don't understand how it works because I'm not older, but I feel like as long as you're funny, you can keep fucking working. Like, it doesn't matter really what you look like, how you age. Like, as long as you can be funny, you can still perform for people.
I do think it's important, though, that you have to keep up on what the kids are into. You can't be so out of time. I'm not saying, like, go out there and try do a college gig and try to dress like you're fucking still in college. Like, I've seen those guys, you know, a baseball cap on backwards, and they're like fucking 42.
Are you talking about Joe Rogan?
No. I love Joe.
Yeah, nice.
And he also can fucking twist me to a pretzel.
He can twist everyone into a pretzel.
I think, half of the fucking comedy club at once. But, no, it's one of those deals where, like, you still, like, I'm going to be 42. But, like, when I go to do a college, like, I kind of have an idea, at least a grasp of what they're kind of listening to and that type of stuff. And then I still look at it from a 42-year-old's point of view. I usually just go there and give them advice. Like, especially if I do like a
or like a state school or something like that. I'm like, you guys did it right. You did it right. Like if I have a kid someday, I'm gonna tell him to go to like community college. Go to community college. You'll be able to pay it off yourself. Yeah. You know, and then find three other motivated fucking people and start your own business. Do that. These people, like, I feel bad for these kids. They go to these schools. They come out. They're like over $100,000 in debt. You should have a house. And you got a piece of paper.
$91,000.
No, yeah, that. $91,000. And look at you.
Yeah, but you're
sitting here with a NASA fucking shirt. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You never became
an
astronaut.
Matt's writing three books that we've learned. So far.
Yeah, but you could have done that. Did you need them? Did you need them to draw it out of you?
And not only that, but you know, you're coming out of university with you know $100,000 in debt, and you sort of have these nebulous degrees like business,
yeah,
economic, you know, like,
I mean, or digital media production.
I had a mass communications degree. That's what I with a focus in radio.
Yeah, my brother
has. Did you go to MassCom? Where'd you go?
I went to Emerson College. If there was any person that could have skipped college, it was me. I could have totally skipped. It's like nobody in radio went to, I guess, like some of the broadcasters, I guess, did. But I'm just saying the amount of guys who, like, I don't know how it works now because Clear Channel owns everything. But back in the day, people used to just call in. You did wacky voices, and all of a sudden, you were the Billy West on whatever.
I worked in radio in LA. I worked at K-Rock for 3 years, and the reason that I got on K-Rock is because I went on the morning show to promote a TV show I was doing, and they just offered me a job. Like, it was literally, if I had gone to broadcast school and done the whole thing, I don't think I ever would have worked there. It was total happenstance.
Yeah.
I ended up getting that job.
Dude, they were trying to teach us how to make audition tapes, and you were learning how to edit them and do all that. It was all bullshit.
But what people should understand about the business is, you know, paying a shitload of money for headshots and the acting class and all that. I mean, to a degree, I guess some of that stuff is good, but if you send your headshot to a casting director, it ends up in a bin, and you know, I don't mean to shatter people's
dreams.
They
write their lunch order on the back.
A little bit.
Or if it's they'll make fun of it.
Right.
Like, I know so many people that work in casting offices that they find the worst ones that get sent in, and they bring them home.
That's
and
why
everyone laughs at.
That's
them.
Why it's really important when you're making a headshot, horrible. Do four panel headshots.
Yeah, exactly.
One picture of you in glasses, so you look smart.
One
then
with
one
a sailor cap.
One with a sailor cap, and then one with some sort of sporting equipment. Let's say you put I don't know, a hockey mask over a baseball bat and sling it over your shoulder, just to let them know that you can mix it up a little bit.
How many times I've seen that headshot?
Casey Jones.
That was the standard. Headshot. I have a book called Faces International. And Faces International, I think, got put out of business for, I think there was, man, please don't sue me if you work for Faces International. I don't know if the story is true. There was something shady going on, but essentially it was a magazine of headshots. So they would charge people, and people would buy pages or quarter pages or whatever. And it was just from the 80s. It was just all these bummer headshots of people, these just poor, desperate people.
And they thought they were going to make it.
Thought they were going to make it by being in the Faces International book. I have two copies of it that I've been holding on to for years that are amazing.
That's depressing.
But
no, that's another thing to tell college kids.
End up on Tim and Eric, maybe.
They might.
The amount of money that you can make trying to help somebody make it. Like the people like website designers, headshot, and like what I love too is like the photographers is like open mic photographers. Like if you think you suck at photography, that's okay. Just find people who suck at acting. They don't have any money, and together there you go. You learn,
guys, shitty together.
The best. Yeah. Listen, if you want to do something crafty, like, you know, acting or stand up or whatever, don't fucking go to school. Just start trying to do it. Like you can't. When people are like, how do I do stand up? I'm like, you do it. You do it.
Write 5 minutes.
Go do it 100. Go do it 100. Louis, years and years and years ago, Louis Anderson gave me the best advice I ever got, which was, what'd you say?
Feud. That's what
yes, exactly. He said that I should get together with my family and try to pick the top 5 answers out of 100 people surveyed.
And on the board.
No, he said, go out and do 100 shows and then come back and see where you're at, you know, because you have no idea who you are until you get up on stage 100 times. That's when you kind of start seeing who you are. When did you know, like, what was the aha moment for you in stand-up?
Oh, I had a zillion of them. It was all baby steps. I remember in the beginning, I was so afraid. My biggest fear was, how am I going to get the mic out of the mic stand? Because I'd never done it. And I was convinced I was going to pull it out and the plug was going to come out.
and everyone was just going to laugh at me, and I'd have to live with my parents for the rest of my life.
Because like that my one fear moment, is putting it back in. I'm always like, it's going to be so loud, it's going to be so distracting, it's going to go boom, boom, boom. You know?
Yeah, that was like a big hurdle when I finally took it out of the mic stand. And then what's funny, like I have like some of the old VHS tapes I have in there of me doing stand up. It's fucking hilarious because I am pacing the stage back. I don't stop moving at any point. It's all nervous energy, and none of my movement enhances the joke. It's actually so distracting to watch. I can't even believe I got any laughs.
Yeah.
Like I would just be like, it was like I was on coke. I'd be like, yeah, so my dad was crazy. And when I was a kid, I had a paper route, and I would just be pour 10-minute set, I would be pouring sweat.
Did you start in Boston?
Yeah. Started at Nick's Comedy Stop on Warrington Street, which still semi exists. They still have this sign, but it's really this Euro trash club, and they just wait for the comedy to end and then people start dancing. So it's kind of sad. It's like on life support. It's like when you just fucking sign the papers and put it out of its misery.
I did some comedy venue in Monterey, California, and the second the stand-up is done, they put these fucking dance poles up on the stage, and it turns into a nightclub. The ends of the shows are people starting to come in for the nightclub thing, so it's just like...
It was almost what happened to comics after your set the last night, when it just turned into a nightclub with the loudest music ever.
It did? Yeah. Oh, downstairs. Oh, yeah. It was a club.
Well, it was like the DJ was spinning downstairs, but everybody was upstairs.
Yeah. But it was so funny, and I'd go downstairs at comics, and it's all black folks, and then Matt's cherubic little face just in the middle smiling, and he just waved, hey! It was awesome.
They were still giving us free drinks down there.
Yeah, they were.
It was awesome.
This is
comics in New York.
There's a downstairs.
They call it Ochi's Lounge. It's like an alt room. It's like they have like open mics, and like your kids put on like small little shows down there.
But it was a dance club this Saturday night.
Never go there. I have my loyalty is at Caroline's. They headlined me when I used to draw like 8 people, and they had to pull the curtain.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't see the cavernous emptiness of the room. So
that's always like a horrible sound. Like the only place with the curtain I've noticed is at the Improv in Hollywood, where it's just like, you know, it's like, you know, the show's kind of underway and they realize no more people are showing up, so you hear that.
I feel like the best thing you could do is give them a fucking can of WD-40 and like, could you please grease the squeaking parts so you don't hear that.
Yeah, pull up.
Yeah. What's sort of your, I mean, because you're one of those comics that, and I don't know if, I'm sure you must have some idea of this, but you're one of those comics that other comics will come back into the room to watch because you have, and it was actually really inspiring for me to see like 4 years ago, and I feel like to a degree, why are you making squeak noises with your pee popper?
It's wobbly, and so I was trying to fix it, and I realized I'm sorry.
I'm in the middle of a really serious, deep moment here.
I know, Bill Burr, really good, inspiring. Let's go.
No, you help me.
All right, we're back on track.
This is the worst part ever, taking compliments.
we're back on track.
How did you get so awesome? Well,
funny story. Awesome one, in fact.
But you're one of those people that made me realize, like, oh, you can have, and it sounds obvious, but it wasn't obvious to me as much before, but, you know, you can have these runs where you're just punching the audience, like, 5 or 6 times in a row with, like, 5 or 6 quick tags. Right. On something. I mean, did you start off that way? What's your process?
Well, that sort of run thing was just, that was the Boston style when I came. Like, Boston is really rapid pacing. Like, guys like Don Gavin, Kevin Knox. Of course, I'm spacing now on all the guys. It was so long ago when I worked. But
That's right. We have a Fatstronaut.
Oh, yeah. But all those guys.
On. He'll take up most of it.
Those guys, like,
really. Oh, God, Jonah.
Like, Boston
too
comedy was,
okay.
was all about... Am I even, like, answering this question, you guys, at this point? You guys are just, like, making noises in the background?
Oh, we're listening.
It was all about, like, just fucking destroying the crowd. Killing as hard as you could possibly kill. That's what it was all about. And they also really policed people. If you stole jokes, you'd get... You know, when I came up, you'd get banned from the club. And back in the day, you'd get the shit kicked out of you and you would get banned. So that was the crazy 80s. I came up in the early 90s.
That's good, though.
It was great.
It was great, and it should be done more out here, if you know what I mean.
Is that did Rogan come from Boston? Is that why
Rogan did come from Boston?
He's really nice, and I'm going to tell him what you said, Jonah.
No, I just backwards hat. He wears it like that.
Okay, good.
I like Joe Rogan.
No. I don't think you did. I think you have an issue with him.
No, I do not.
Well, we can clear it up when he comes on.
Like, what was he saying during the break? Something about
we haven't had a break, Bill. We've been recording the whole time, guys.
We did it at the break because what you said about Joe was so
horrendous.
And then when you mixed martial arts, what you said about that was just...
I don't even know what that means.
Man, put him in a kimura? What's wrong with you?
Jonah, I don't think the term MM gay is really appropriate.
Guys, I am a big fan. I love Joe Rogan.
No, Joe's sweet. He's actually going to come on, so you guys can work it out. But I love that style because I'm not like a quick one or two line joke writer, and so that style feels very comfortable for me to just keep like tagging stuff out.
Well, this was the thing. Well, back then they also used to paper the room, so it was just like Nick's was basically 400 seats of angry, drunk Boston people who didn't pay for the show and already felt like they won when they walked in the door, like, can you believe this? I never won anything in my life. So they would just get hammered. And I remember Kevin Knox, we used to go up on his show, and Kevin Knox was one of these guys where we used to joke he didn't host the show. He took, like, breaks from killing. He would just be absolutely destroying, and then you'd come up there with your 8 minutes material, and basically it was like riding one of the giant waves and trying not to fucking... You just tried to ride it to just survive is basically what you did. But so what I learned in Boston was how to kill in front of a big crowd. But then I went down to New York, and New York was this whole leaning on the mic stand and just sounding like you were just talking to the crowd. And that was a huge adjustment because... My act, I could, if the crowd club was packed, I could destroy. But if I went down there and there was only 8 people there, and I had my sweaty
big crowd energy,
yeah, my sweaty back and forth, my dad was crazy going. It looked bizarre, and I fucking would bomb like you wouldn't believe. And it took a while to like learn how to do it. And the only guy I've ever seen come in with like high energy in front of a small crowd and kill is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in comedy. This comedian, Gary Valentine.
Oh, I know Gary. Yeah, Kevin James' brother.
Hilarious guy, right? And I was sitting at the back of the Comedy Cellar, still at the point where I was just watching guys trying to get on. And he and there was like literally like I think like 6 or 7 people in the crowd. And they were just, you know, there was like 3 people, then 2 people, 1. It was a disgusting night. And I watched like all these comedians come down, how they dealt with it. Daryl Hammond was hilarious. He would tell a joke, and when he was done telling it, people would laugh, but there was so few people, and then he'd just throw his head back, almost like a kid. He's like, do like this. And then he'd go into his next one. But Gary went up there, and you would have thought it was a jam-packed crowd, but he went up there and was having so much fun and had that fucking goofy energy. I've never seen it to this day. He fucking destroyed in front of 6 people. Like, I remember this one guy was like slumped over onto the person he was with in front of 6 people, and he didn't change his fucking energy, and somehow it worked. He's the only guy I've ever seen do it.
That's amazing. I love Gary. I feel like I haven't seen him for a while. Has he been on the road? Do you know? Do you talk to him?
I think he's been doing like movies, and he was doing King of Queens when that was on. I don't know, but I like he's one of those guys. Like, what sucks about when you finally end up headlining is you don't get to work with all the guys that you loved coming up, and then also you don't see your friends and everything. And I was just thinking, last time I think I worked with him was in Vegas. For a couple of days, he filled in for this headliner who'd booked some stuff. So he just came in for a couple of days, and he was just the greatest guy ever to hang out with. He was like one of those comedians where you talk about where offstage they're not like morose.
Right.
He was just fucking hilarious. And yeah, huge fan of that guy.
I saw him fuck with an old lady at the Hollywood Improv, and he was just down there, this little gray-haired lady sitting in front. Which, yeah, I'm going to say I think maybe they shouldn't have sat a little old lady in the front of the room, but that's just my opinion. And he was up in her face, and he was like, oh, like pretending he was going to make out with her. But he was way committing to it. Like, he wouldn't let it go. And it finally got to the point where someone in the back of the room just had this really organic reaction of,
come on.
That's the worst thing. Well, that's his thing. I think that's you stumbled on it. They totally committed. That's totally what he did when he went at six people. Like you would have thought, like fucking Lauren Michaels was in the crowd, and he was like, "This is it. If I don't kill on this
swinging
one,
for the fences tonight."
Yeah. And there were so many other guys who went up that night and just gave into the fact that there's only six people. This sucks.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, all the people who didn't that night all went on to do shit, you know?
Well, you know, but I think it's an interesting exercise because I feel like the comic, part of the comic gut reaction is to, or for me in my early days would have been to point out what a crappy situation it was. And then it's just sort of like, well, why blame the people in the audience that there's not more of them there?
You become the Catholic priest.
Exactly.
Just giving people shit.
That's exactly right.
And you molest the couple.
And then they feel bad.
Hey now.
Hey.
Fucking a kid in the hand.
I forgive you for that.
You guys like hipsters? You can't do anything in the news? Nothing like topical?
No.
I'm bad at writing topical stuff. I just don't write. Well, that's not true. I do the Chelsea show a lot, and I write a lot of topical stuff for that. But
I don't gravitate towards it. I write material so slowly is that like if by the time I come up with a good joke that has something to do with the topic, like it's already passed and I can't keep up.
I'm currently writing a new hour, and when I write the new hour, anything's fair game. And the amount of topical horse shit in my act right now, Tiger Woods, that woman who got ate by the whale at SeaWorld. I mean, anything, you know. I don't know why I'm not talking about that jackass in the Prius who couldn't stop.
Right.
I'm not saying I won't in Atlanta next week.
We should promote dates. Where are you going to be in Atlanta?
I'm going to be at the Punchline. And I'm going to the Masters on Sunday because I fucking knew Tiger was going to play.
You're going to the Masters?
Yeah.
So what are the dates? This might go up after your Atlanta dates.
Well, what's today's date?
Today's March 29th.
No, it's the 31st.
31st.
Let's 31st. Say it's the 31st.
So tomorrow's the 1st. Saturday's the 3rd. The 7th. 8th, 9th, and 10th of April.
8th, 9th, and 10th
If I'm not there, then I'm in Newport, Kentucky, which for some reason is considered the Cincinnati
the funny bone. Yeah, I was there last year.
Yeah.
It was a fun room.
Yeah, no.
Why do you hate it so much, Bill?
Why do I don't like performing in malls. No, you know what it is? I don't mind the comedy club. Comedy club's great. I hate walking out and, you know, there's like one of those little fucking wagons, cell phone things, you know, right outside. It's just, it's fucking
depressing. You know what they do have, though, across the little plaza from the Newport Funny Bone is the Newport Aquarium. So if you're a fan of fish... then that's a good place to go see them live in their lives.
It's very
in a captive environment.
Does it say on any of my Wikipedia pages that I started like 9 of them? Most people start like 9 Facebook pages. I have like 9 just so people can't tell which is the truth. I'm actually terrified of the ocean.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, absolutely fucking terrified
of it. Because of sea monsters?
No, because of the actual monsters like sharks.
No, that's what I meant.
Oh, sea monsters, yeah. No, like I swear to God, if I saw a shark, I think I would just fucking swim right at it just to get it over with.
No, what made it?
Yeah, Jaws came out when I was like in second grade, and what else? Just fucking, I read a bunch of classic books, like everything back there was like Mutiny on the Bounty. Everything was out at sea and all the fucking horrific shit that happens at sea, scurvy and all this shit.
Also, every night before I went to bed, my mom would say, "The ocean will kill you. Good night." And then,
the water alone can kill you.
I used to have weird nightmares as a kid about being suspended over large bodies of water, and they freaked me out because it made me feel so tiny and insignificant. Like, you know, that you would just get swallowed up and that's it forever.
And I also don't like that you can't see. Like, I'd rather just have a lion charge at me and I could fucking see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Than that shit where you see like the crocodile look at you and then go under the water.
And then go, and you don't know where it's going to come from.
Well, that's the thing about like in the ocean, in the water, like that's their territory. They can live there. It's like you can't do anything.
It's a goddamn good thing there's no such thing as dirt lions, because that'd be really shitty if you were just walking across a savannah and a fucking lion burrowed underneath your feet and just like fucking ripped your foot into the earth.
Like, have you ever seen, you guys ever see Open Water? You ever seen
that? I was going to say you shouldn't see that if you're.
Yeah, that's terrifying. Made a sequel out of that, too.
If I was in the water, this is what I would hope I would do. If I was in that water, I would just keep every 5 seconds putting my the snorkel?
The goggles
in the water, mask. Looking for the shark when it came in, and I'd lead with my jugular. Let's get this fucking over with. I'm going to sit there, you gnawing on my leg, another one's eating my hand.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Just taking little nips.
And you're drowning. Well, first of all, they come up and they bite you to see if you're edible, to see what's going on there, have a little taste of you.
Yeah.
So now you're bleeding in the water.
Well, the sharks don't typically like the taste of human meat. Yeah, that's why a lot of people get spit back.
Yeah,
that's great. True. So they just sort of gnaw and tear your leg off.
So you just have a cartoon-like chunk out of you, and you live the rest of your life like a Wile E. Coyote.
Like the Indianapolis?
Yep. What do you mean?
What? You didn't see Jaws?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Sorry. I was thinking about something else.
Sharks got a black eye, lifeless
like
eye.
Like a doll's eye. Y'all know me. No, I make a living.
Finish it, man. Yeah, I was captivated.
The whole movie.
Okay. Y'all know me. No, I make a living. Catching this shark, it ain't going to be easy or cheap.
You know, it was better. You had a better voice the first time around.
Now you're blowing through it.
You kind of didn't really commit.
You don't like the attention on you, do you?
I like being a fat astronaut.
I thought we've established it's fastronaut.
It is fastronaut. Okay, turn it into this.
Space sharks. Their eyes are black like a doll.
Space sharks.
Sparks.
Now, I see you peeking around Jonah to see what's going on with this hockey match.
Well, let me ask you guys, can you believe Rod Brind'Amour is still playing?
Oh, God, give me a...
After all these decades, he must be at least 74...
I don't know how... He's been playing hockey longer than I've been doing stand-up.
That's at least 18 years, we know that.
At least 18 years, yeah. I used to play with the Flyers, as they say in Boston.
I know, that's a team in Philadelphia.
Yeah. What do you guys know about this? You know what would be great? Why don't one of you start announcing to let your fans know what's going on in this hockey game?
Well, the water seems to be frozen, and that makes it a solid surface for these people
to... Sure does, Chris. A good thing it's cold enough in that room to keep that solid state.
Now, Jonah, I can't help but notice that all the players are carrying sticks, which they're using to bat around a small black device.
Jesus Christ, forget it, Chris.
I'm not sure. Well, it looks like one of the players in the white jerseys has the ding-dong. He's mapping it around a little bit. Those giant ice spatulas they're using are... scooping it into some type of netted device.
Yes, the blue and reds are really having it handed it to them.
We haven't really divined whether Canadians. Or not the they are Canadians.
Yeah.
So
through the neutral zone, over the blue line, snapshot. Go
and he missed the thing that makes the point thing go loud.
And now the point.
You know what? You guys are ruining the sport for me. Just stop. Okay.
All right.
It's over.
And it's an exciting point system of one versus one.
I know. I want to go get something at Tim Hortons now because that was an advertisement on the side of the. Hockey wall.
Tim Hortons is Canada's Dunkin' Donuts. That's another thing too.
Why are we getting a Dunkin' Donuts? Sorry, fat astronaut talking.
Damn it! It's fastronaut.
Fastronaut.
What did you think of the people? The shape of the people in London? I thought, you know, as much as they shit on us for being out of shape and everything, I thought not that they were obese, but they were just like they were mushy.
So they're like southern. They're like southerners in the sense that, you know, all their food's fried and it's, you know, like they drink a lot of beer and ales. And they have high fat diets. You know, they have high fat diets over there.
They always
I'd be able to really pull in some tail in England.
I did.
I just had this weird fantasy that I would just go there and I'd be really attractive to them.
Have you done it yet?
No, never tried it.
Oh, have you been working out, Governor?
What have I gone back in time to some sort of Dickensian prostitute
den? Why don't you go over there? Because, you know, you instantly you have a... Why didn't I leave that?
Are you about to start doing crunches while we're doing the podcast?
I need to lay... My back fucking hurts. From talking into a microphone. Are you going to fucking... You should go over there, man. You're going to have an accent. You know what? And your instinct is going to be to try to talk like them, but be yourself.
No. I will. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I do.
You're talking to me like a college kid.
That's right. Go to be yourself. That's right.
There is
drop
a hard...
out of college, and you'll go fly to France.
There is a Hardwickshire in Northern England. I am very half English. There is a Hardwickshire.
Oh wow.
That I feel like I could go and claim it.
Do
be
it.
Like thanks
just
for holding my castle.
You know, I thought Liverpool was a part of England. Not part of England. Part of London.
Oh, no. I think they get really mad if you say that to them.
Yeah, I really did. I thought it was. I can't always hear the Beatles. Oh, Liverpool. But I just thought, you know.
The Liverpoolians.
I thought it was like New Jersey. It's like right across the way.
No.
Or is that like Manchester? Is Manchester like Jersey?
No, Manchester is like San Jose, California, from L.A., and then Liverpool is like Sacramento.
All I know is that if you go...
it's only the size of California.
Here's what I learned from doing comedy.
It's a small little country.
Here's what I learned from doing comedy in London. For some reason, and I don't know why, but I went with it because I'm adaptable, it is very funny to say, to mention people being south of the Thames. Apparently, if you live in London, they consider that some sort of retard village. I don't know. I mean, but I don't know.
That's the other side of the track. Well, how
I don't know if
not...
that's true. I just know that they would laugh if, because I heard a couple of comments be like, "All right, they're south of the Thames," and they were like, "Oh, fuck those cunts!" And then I don't know why.
South of the 10 freeway in Los Angeles.
South of the Thames. Yeah, south of the Thames.
How is it not the Thames? That's how it's spelled. That's what I said. I go. Is that the Thames River? Like it's a Thames, mate.
I don't know.
And I'm like, all right.
Why aren't books pronounced books?
Good point.
No,
it isn't.
What?
That one doesn't make sense.
Like books.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah. Because look is look.
Should be Luke.
Yeah, should be Luke.
If you're a lion tamer, it's T-A-M-E-R.
Maybe you should go the other way around. Maybe boo should be bow.
Whoa. Fuck, man.
Didn't Gallagher do this bit sitting at a school desk? Remember that one?
It's interesting you said Gallagher. That. I brought some melons here. Jonah, sledgehammer me.
His father fuck-ups 101, where he did this bit about rearing children. Anyway.
I love Gallagher when I was growing up. That guy had some great bits, and what killed him was the smash in the watermelons. Yep. That's all that everybody remembered. He actually had, he had bits. I mean, shit. I mean, I'm saying that they're fucking... They
and you know, and that's
bits,
an interesting thing as a comic, because you feel like you do the watermelon thing a couple times, people go nuts for it, and you're like, well, it's drawing people, so naturally I'm going to keep doing it because I want to play these bigger venues and make more money. And then eventually the watermelons go around in a poetic loop and smash the actual comedy that you were doing.
But that's what's funny about Gallagher 2, is that like he gave Gallagher 2 all of the jokes and none of the melon smashing. Gallagher 2 was not allowed to do any of the melon smashing.
And that was his brother.
Yeah.
Wow, is that really?
That's real.
Are you really getting the best parts there? Like, yeah, you can have this laptop, but there's no hard drive in it. Thanks.
No, but I heard all those guys. I heard Jeff Foxworthy that you might be a redneck thing with just some stuff he did at the end of his act, and then that became all that he was known for.
I'm sure the same thing happened to Larry the Cable Guy. I'm sure that was just a thing that he started doing on the side.
That get her done thing. Yeah, and a lot of people shit all over that. I don't, you know, it's like, dude, if you figured out a way where you can make like $1 zillion. And you don't really have a real... I don't consider being a comedian a real job.
Yeah.
Because it's like the amount of time that I can just sit around in my fucking boxers before I actually have to go to work. And, the, you know, only... I mean, I guess the flying and that type of stuff. But I don't know. I just feel like you won.
Yeah. It's great. If you can do it successfully and get people to come out and see you, it's a fucking phenomenal lifestyle. Yeah.
Whether your act is a nightmare or not.
Now, how do you... But how?
I'm not saying it is in particular, but there's some people who have made it, and it's just like I can't even watch it. It's just a fucking nightmare. But people enjoy it, so who am I to you know,
take the joy away from those people?
Yeah, and I hate when someone looks at somebody who's doing some wacky shit or whatever the fuck you want to call it, and then they try to act like it's because of that guy that they didn't make it. Like it's like that dude is not doing anything anywhere near your act. You know?
The weird anger that happens a lot out here. It's like, oh, he got that role. It's like that dude's like completely different. That dude's black.
It's the same weird kind of human competitive thing where if you hear like, oh, Charlize Theron got married. Fuck, you know, like, dude, you're not next on the list. Like, it's just like a weird competitive thing that people have. Yeah. How do you?
By the way, best hair in hockey, right there, Kerry Fraser.
Look at that.
Who needs a helmet when you got that?
It's so unbelievable. It looks fake. He's a referee. He's retiring after like 30 years in the league. I remember being the old Boston guard and listening to people scream, "Kerry, you fucking suck."
He has a gentle face and seems like a nice guy.
The guy talking to him seems very nervous or just greasy.
Well, he's talking to a referee. He feels like he's being judged in ways that he's not aware of. That's the problem with a judge.
You know what? This is my NASA right here. Like, I'm actually going to watch this interview with an NHL referee. There, see?
That's us.
There you go.
Really
one day
nice.
We'll go out and try to chase some tails together. We'll see what happens.
Go out and get some pussies.
I'll get all those pussies, Bill.
Bill, I just a couple quick things before we let you go. Watch the rest of this.
Before you let
hockey.
Me go in my own apartment?
Yeah, yeah.
Just wander around. Explore the space.
Yeah.
This is what I love about doing the podcast, is going over to people's places. Like, it's just kind of fun to be in their environment, and it's just more comfortable.
I think this way. You put a new twist on the MTV Cribs, where you go to somebody who really doesn't have a nice place.
Audio Cribs.
Yeah, Audio Cribs. You do a podcast Cribs.
Podcast Cribs.
It's a mashup.
I love... Oh, well, from right here, I see Bill Hicks' Sane Man, which is an awesome VHS. And then a bunch of drumming DVDs.
Yep, I've watched all of them, and I still suck at playing drums.
Under the Table and Drumming, Carter Beaufort's drumming thing.
Yep.
Well, that sounds like a Dave
Matthews
thing.
And I told you, I have that one that I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to get him in trouble because I'm a fan of his. It's a VHS from the 1970s where he teaches, I mean, 1980s, where he teaches you how to play double bass drums while gay bashing homosexuals. He was talking about, like, one of the questions was, why did you start playing double bass? And for the drummers out there, bass, if you don't play double bass, your right foot's on the bass drum, the other's on the hi-hat. And, you know, for a lot of people, it just sort of sits there. So he was just saying, you know, I was playing the bass drum with my right foot, my left leg was just sort of sitting there, you know, it was just sort of, it was like gay after a while. And like when he said it, I was just like, wow. And I was like, well, you know, whatever. It's the 80s. I guess you could get away with that. I thought it'd be like one little thing. And it literally keeps progressing to the point.
I think the metaphor works.
Like Eddie Murphy's Raw.
The metaphor works in the way that, you know, that like that it's gay in the sense that it's just sitting there not bothering anyone, but he still wants to be aggressive at it for some reason.
No, like, you know, like gay means like lame now. It also can mean lame, and I really think it's bullshit that that gay people get pissed about that, because gay also used to mean like really fucking happy.
Yeah,
there was a whole.
It was a name. There like people like people was a name. People like women's name. It was women's name. Gay.
Yeah, gay 90. Like words change.
Yeah.
Okay, and you don't own them.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like the Oscars. You know, you're it's Candace Bergen now. They don't give a fuck.
I want to know.
And the worst thing you can do is address it and make a commercial like, you know something, this really annoys us. Whatever you do, stop, you know, don't do this anymore.
Well, especially with today's internet culture, they'll just make 50,000 of the thing that you say is annoying just to with you, no matter what it is.
Oh, yeah, I've lived that.
So a couple things that I want to cover before we release you into your own apartment is... And I'm sure you've talked about this a lot, but the rant you did at the opening and Anthony thing was that in Boston? Were you in Boston?
No, it was actually in New Jersey, but just outside of Camden, New Jersey, which is right outside of Philly.
It was one of the most, and I've watched it a few times, one of the most eloquent dicings of any crowd I've ever seen, to the extent that...
That was ever taped.
They fucking, like... The fact that you're telling them how stupid they are and they are doubled over laughing.
Well, that's what makes Philly. That's what makes Philly great. Is they would rather have you do that than actually do your act. A lot of them. And this is how crazy Philly is. Everybody else remembers that except for them, like because they behave like that on a regular basis. A lot of them.
What I want to know what happened. What was going on in your head in the moment? Because. You know, there's as comics, I feel like we have these moments where we're like, "Am I going to go down this path? No, I'll pull back." What clicked in your head that you were just like, "It's fucking on," and then you just went?
No, it's more like I'm not leaving. I think it was because I hate when a crowd has control of a show, and I felt like the caliber of comedians that were on that night were they were getting like for my money, there was the best comics that were out. In the business, I mean, it was a ridiculous lineup, and they were acting like we were a bunch of fucking open micers. I mean, I'm not like they did it to everybody. They booed the first guy, and then I went on like 3 hours after that. But they you know, it was not like they booed. Like one of the things was that people say about that night is that everybody got booed. They didn't. Like the first guy got booed, and that kind of set the tone. It was a group of people that, and then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and the sun went down, and it just got, it was like outside, it was fucking evil. And it was one of those deals where, you know, people were going out, like really backstage, where it seemed to me the vibe backstage was like, fuck, I gotta get this crowd quickly, or this is gonna be ugly. And that's what I was doing backstage, and it pissed me off, where I was just, I don't know, arrogant in a way. I kind of brought it on myself where I was just like, I've been in this fucking business too long to have to feel like I'm in a bar room right now and I got to fucking impress you. Look at you, you fucking losers. That's what I was thinking about. I was like, I don't even give a fuck. Fuck this show. And then I walked out there and the enormity of the show, there was like 10,000 people. Then all of a sudden I was like, oh, fuck, I better get going here, right? And I went up and I opened with a joke that didn't get a laugh. And then I quickly ran to one that I knew would get a laugh, but they had already been playing it on the radio as a promo.
Oh.
So they already heard it. And I got to like my third punchline. And let me tell you something. They wanted the laugh. They wanted to, because I was one of the bigger guys on the show, or one of the guys on the show, I should say. And they wanted, and I fucked up. I fucked up is what happened. And then they started booing me. And I immediately was like, oh my God, Opie and Anthony are going to play this audio of me getting booed.
Fight or flight.
And everybody's going to make fun of me. And I was so fucking mad. And I'd gotten booed before, so it wasn't a new sound. So I was just like, and I remember thinking like all the shit I could have said that night when I got booed one time. I can't remember the fuck I was. I got booed a couple times. And I just remember driving home thinking of the people in the crowd who booed me. Going, I let that guy boo me. I let her stand up and say that. And I just, one of those fucking you want to kill yourself moments. So it's not like I said, next time that happens, I'm going to do it. It just sort of was in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out. It just came out. And the whole fucking thing was just sort of spontaneous.
But you can see when you're watching it, and it's easily YouTubeable. I just put Bill Burr, Opie Anthony. It's such an organic moment. Like
Rocky thing I already had. The Rocky thing was the only thing that I already had.
But I mean, just the emotion of it was so organic, the way that it unfolds, and you start going down that path, and then
counting down. Too.
Yeah, and then it's sort of like, no, I'm not fucking leaving. And then how long did that go on?
That was 12 minutes. You know, when you do like those big shows, like
they have the clock right there.
That's what a lot of people don't understand. Is they have that clock there.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was doing it.
Here you go, 7 minutes. Start going.
I'm like, I don't even know why. I don't even know why I was just reaching for shit, and I lucked out where there was people from Jersey and New York there, and they hate, like, they're all in the same divisions in all sports, so they fucking don't like each other.
Yeah.
So they were the first people I got on my side, I think, was when I started shitting on Philly's teams. They loved it. And, you know, the same way where you were talking about, you know, south of the Thames River, everybody has that. So people in New Jersey shit on Philly. Philly shits on Jersey. Philly doesn't like Pittsburgh. Fucking
it's a
India,
big triangulation
India,
of hatred.
Yeah, India doesn't like Pakistan. You know, I don't like my neighbor downstairs.
I should have done
shit.
All my Pakistan jokes when I was in India the last time. That's why I learned.
It's the typical shit. So I started going that route, and then I don't know. There was like I think the reality was they wanted to laugh. So the fact that I somehow was able to turn it around, they actually appreciated that. But there was a core group of them who fucking hated me. And I remember when I went off, the most amazing part was when I went off, Jim Norton still had to go on. And I was actually going like, Jim's going to be pissed at me because what I did was really selfish. I came out and fucked up, and what I should have done was just taken the bullet. But and Jim went out, never addressed it, went right into his act and fucking killed for 15 fucking minutes. And then that was the end of the show. And then we're going to bring everybody out one more time. So they bring me back out again. Everybody booed, but then laughed and applauded. And I waved. And there was one kid down. I can still remember. He was like yelling at me. Like he ran down to the front and he's going, hey, Bill, give me the finger. He's going, fuck you. Fuck you. He's giving me the finger going, fuck you. And I kept cupping my ear going, what? What? And he would yell louder, fuck you. Fuck you. And I kept going like, what? I can't. Kid doesn't understand. He's giving me the finger. And I literally got him, you know, the expression hopping mad.
Yeah.
He was jumping up and down going, fuck you. Fuck you. And I just kept laughing. And
when you walked off stage, what did you feel like? Aha. Or did you feel more like, wow, I'm glad I got through that one.
No, I was nervous. I didn't know. I knew it was going to end up on the internet because a lot of the shows, you know, people, you know, everybody's got the cameras. Anything fucked up happens now, people tape it. So I was really, I was humiliated. I had a headache. It wasn't fun. That's the one thing was because it went well, people, you know, comedians know it's not fun. But fucking regular people might have a tendency to look at it and think it wasn't fun. I had a fucking headache. But as I talked to the other comics and they were like, dude, that was fucking awesome. I started to relax a little bit, but I was still nervous that I was like, oh, fuck, that's going to end up on YouTube and people are going to be like, and think that I suck as a comic. Like that was the exact you know, you want shit on the internet or you getting cheered. So, and then what happened was, oh, this is hilarious. It kind of took on a life of its own. And right as I embraced it, like, yeah, all right,
I'm
huh?
that guy.
I'm fucking cool. I then go to Cleveland to finish the tour. And at that point, it had been so talked about that the people in Cleveland wanted me to do it again. So I walked out. Hey, everybody, how you doing? It was just, he started booing me. And that one, then I was like, oh, my God, my career's over. Every time I go on stage now, people are going to be like, because, you know,
they expect you to be the Gallagher of aggression.
Right. And I have that typical entertainer thing where everybody in the world so gives a fuck about what I'm doing that I thought, like, everyone is going to do this now. And so I knew that they wanted me to trash Cleveland, and I refused to do it. So then it became this stalemate where I was just standing there and they were booing me, and I just said, all right, guys, good night. And I walked off, and I was pissed. I was really fucking mad, and I was just like, you know, I was literally like, fuck the show. I'm not doing the show anymore. I'm not doing any events. I totally went off the fucking deep end. And then like 3 days later, I was like, well, Bill, what did you think was going to happen? You know, didn't you go on the radio station and just sit there and absorb all the compliments that you were getting, you know, as they played you getting booed? What the fuck did you think was going to happen? It's like, you're an idiot. So then I ended up. The first club gig I did after it was San Francisco, and nobody even knew about it. And then I was quickly reminded of how fucking low on the totem pole I am in this business. And I was like, I guess it's going to be all right. And so now it's just something that's really flattering to hear other comedians. But, you know, just to set the record straight, and I said it earlier, you said I was the first guy that I think that something like that was actually taped.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen guys do that. And I know, dude, everything's been done.
Yeah.
Okay, there's this stuff Bill Hicks is, you know, screaming at the girl.
At that woman.
I'm a drunk cunt. I'm going to come in here and fuck up the show. And his shit is so much more evil than mine. And like his thing about his, too, is I was on a huge stage, so there was really a barrier.
Yeah.
He's doing it in a place where, and he's like bending. Like he's almost has his head over their table, and it's like there's beer glasses. There was no just plastic cups and shit, and you really have to throw it far to get me. So that's like more. It's way more. You know.
Yeah, the Bill Hicks one is a little uncomfortable because he's screaming at the woman. If you guys, you should YouTube it. But he basically, a woman just says something like "You suck," and just the idiocy of that heckle is what unhinged him.
It's also the act that he was doing, and he was doing it in those rooms, I think, and it was just. Night after night after night of watching the feature go on and be like, you ever, you know, been laying in a haystack and it's fucking destroyed.
And then he's doing this amazing intricate sociio-political commentary. I mean, in the 80s, yeah. Which is mind-blowing for a comic to do.
Yeah, and a lot of the shit that he was talking about going on, you know, is really like played out. His shit is still really contemporary. So you're doing
totally works.
You know that deal. When you're in front of a crowd and then they're morons. And it's bad enough that they're not getting you, but then when they say you suck, like it's just like that's the worst thing ever is being angry on
and
stage.
And then and so yeah, so he literally is like, "Fuck you, get her the fuck out of here, you stupid cunt." He says cunt like 10 times,
yeah.
And then he stops, and he just kind of has that moment of like, "Hey, you're gonna get out of this one."
he
kind of just stops to take note of the hole that he's in. I really wish I could have seen the rest of that show just to see where that went.
Yeah, no, that's not the direction you want to go in, but it happens.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for having us in your home, and you have a lovely place, by the way.
Well, thank you for lying on your podcast. I appreciate that.
No, your place is very nice.
It is. It's decent.
And
I'm a fan of the West Wing part of your home. It's very.
Oh, is that what you like? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was good. It's cavernous.
That's where I banish my girlfriend too when I can't deal with it.
over to the wing.
Yeah.
Well, if we,
I have a rescue pit bull, by the way. That's what's in the other room that we had to stick.
Is that you're like? Yeah, she gets a little nervous around people, and for a pit bull, by nervous that means spine gets extracted via your front.
That's like a Mortal Kombat end move.
She's a little nervous. My spine is in her mouth.
Yeah.
That's a Mortal Kombat move.
Just a finish.
We're working on it. We're doing some dog whisperer shit. We're trying to get her. So, well, thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate
Thanks, man.
It.
So online, people, BillBurr.com.
Yeah, BURR, and this month of April, just in case this goes. This comes out after Punchline. I actually already hyped it. I'll be in Cincinnati via Newport, Kentucky at the Funny Bone.
But I can honestly say, having performed with Bill Burr and having seen him many times, you have got to see him live. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal comic, and you will be cheating yourself if you don't.
So watch, I'm going to bomb all week.
Chris Hardwick's here.
All right, guys. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.